lasers for stun and prepare for warp speed. It's time for the We Got the Geeks movie talk.
How about a ride, mister?
Jennifer. Oh, you a sight for sore eyes. Let me look at you.
Marty, you're acting like you haven't seen me in a week.
I haven't.
You okay? Is everything all right?
Oh, yeah. Everything is great.
When We Got the Geek attended Hammertown Comic-Con, J-Stu had a chance to interview Claudia Wells from Back to the Future. So first, we'll showcase their interview, and then the We Got the Geek gang reviews Back to the Future.
Yeah. All right, this is J-Stu. I'm at the Hammertown Comic Book Convention, and very honored to be here with Claudia Wells, who played Jennifer Parker in Back to the Future. Very nice to meet you, by the way.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
We're all big fans of the trilogy. I've got to ask you, is it true you almost weren't in the movie?
Well, what happened is I got the part, and then I did I'd already done a pilot that ended up selling, and so it was, ABC wouldn't share me.
Okay, so a lot of people have probably asked you, what was it like working with Michael J. Fox? I'm kind of curious, what was it like doing a scene with Huey Lewis?
I had no idea who he was.
Oh, okay.
That's an awesome question.
Okay. Yeah, I'm a big fan, and he was in disguise and stuff like that. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, very cool. And he was a very nice guy.
Oh, cool. Now, I understand you do have a clothing store in Los Angeles.
I do. It's a men's resale shop called Armani Wells, and people can find it on armaniwells.com. They can also buy pictures, autographed pictures. I ship them worldwide at claudiawells.com. And I'm also involved in a charity called Kids in the Spotlight.
Oh, wow.
And that's kidsinthespotlight.com, and we help foster kids.
Oh, that's a great charity.
Thank you.
Cool. Now, I was looking at your IMDb. I see you have a project coming out called Starship Rising?
Yes.
What can you tell us about it? Is there a release date for it?
I'm not sure. I think the director said the final cut's going to be done by December, so it'll come out sometime after that.
Cool. How do you like coming out to these things and meeting the fans?
I love it. They're always so very nice.
Oh, cool. Cool. And the geek in me has to ask this. If you could hop in a DeLorean and go anywhere in time, where would you go and why?
I would go to Scarlett O'Hara's party and wear her dress and be there in Gone with the Wind.
Oh, cool. Nice answer. Now, my wife couldn't be here, but she's asked me to ask you. She has a crush on Michael J. Fox. What was it like kissing him?
We choose not to discuss that publicly.
Oh, okay. Nice. Good answer. I like it. Okay. Well, I really appreciate your time today, and definitely continued success, and I hope Canada's treating you well.
I love Canada.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hey, Doc, you better back up. We don't have enough road to get up to 88.
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
This is J-Stu, asking the timeless question, what the hell is a gigawatt? Welcome to a very exciting episode of Movie Talk, and joining us here in the studio, we have a full house of all-star film reviewers. First up, we have Mad Dog John Balmer.
Ah, good choice, sir.
We also have Mara McFly. Tressa Tannen. And we also have the lady who puts the flux in my capacitor, K-Stu.
That was awesome. That was excellent,
sir. Trying
to
be romantic. So,
last week... That means you speed him through time.
Oh.
Yeah. So, last week, we were doing the Monster Review show, and we were trying to figure out maybe a regular show to do about a film trilogy or a film series, and Back to the Future came up. And I don't need an excuse to watch those movies. I love them. I watch them a few times every year.
Really, does anybody need an excuse to watch them? They're, like, they still hold up. Like, they're still three movies that really anybody can get into.
Yes.
I don't think there's anybody that doesn't like them that I've encountered, except stupid people.
I don't think so. They're timeless.
Yeah, they really are. And I don't know. I like, you know, it's set in the 80s. You got elements of the 80s in all three, and us being large fans of the 80s, you can't get enough of it out of these. So it's, I don't know. very special for me. Much like Masters of the Universe was, this was part of my childhood as well.
I don't know how well that worked out.
Shush you. I'll make you watch Beastmaster again.
Yeah, this is a big one for me when I was in high school. It came out in 1985.
An excellent year.
An excellent year. Directed by Robert Zemeckis,
yep.
And written by Bob Gale and Zemeckis. We recently saw this outside on a big screen in Port Dalhousie, which was pretty cool.
Under the stars?
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, first time since 85 I got to see it on a big screen. And definitely, like you said, it still holds up.
Yeah, I think that, like, looking back, this was definitely, like, a real high point in Zemeckis' career. Because it was, what, after he did the first one, or it was after he did the second one, he was doing Roger Rabbit, and, you know, it was right in there when he was at his most creative. You don't see a whole lot of stuff of this quality before or after, really. It was right at that just that five-year time span between 85 and, like, 91. That's 6 years.
Yeah.
There's my math for you. And really, you got the best creativity out of him and the people that he surrounded himself with. You know, with Spielberg producing, and Spielberg didn't actually let anything get too crazy or silly. He actually, like, everything kept in line, and I don't know, everything just flowed well. It was like magic was coming out of this crew of people that put these together.
Well, it's true, considering the fact, I just read that Christopher Lloyd had turned down the role of Doc the first time he got the script.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow.
He wanted to go do a play somewhere, and I forget who talked him into doing it. Not only that, of course, everyone here knows that they'd already filmed 6 weeks of Eric Stoltz as Marty McFly.
Yeah, yes. That's still something not a lot of people know, but it's definitely on all the behind-the-scenes stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, you knew about that.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of a production where they film for 6 weeks with a different actor, and then they go get a different actor?
Well, from what I saw in the behind-the-scenes stuff, because I had known about it, but I didn't know that much, Michael J. Fox was the original pick, but because of his commitments with Family Ties, they didn't approach him, and they hired Eric Stoltz.
Yeah.
And there was a discussion with a producer that, you know, they didn't think he was right for the spot, but they wanted to go ahead anyways. And it wasn't Spielberg, but one of the other dudes who had a say, or a studio head or something like that, said, you know what, go ahead, do so much, maybe it was the 6 weeks, with Eric, and if you absolutely hate it, we'll just stop production and recast. And that's what ended up happening, is they ended up having to recast because they said he was good, but not quite right. And then they pitched it to Michael J. Fox while he's doing Family Ties, and his response was, yeah, I don't need sleep, and he just jumped on board.
Yeah, he's doing Family Ties by day and Back to the Future at night.
And Family Ties was a great show, too. Like, neither one suffered. Like, you got great performances out of...
Yeah. And at the time, I guess they really couldn't spare him on Family Ties, so the lead actress was off because she had just had a baby, so they couldn't spare Michael J. Fox as well.
Right. And, yeah, it was definitely some good stuff coming out back then.
Kath, you had pictures of Michael J. Fox in your locker, did you not?
I did. Lots of them. And it always bothered me on Family Ties that Mallory didn't have pictures of Michael J. Fox up in her room like all of the girls I knew that age.
But it was her brother.
I know, but come on.
And really, Alex P. Keaton is like one of the greatest TV characters of all time.
It's true.
My mother may have made a little sweater vest and tie for my Cabbage Patch Kid when I was a child as well.
Your mother also offered to buy me an orange vest later in life.
Yes, she did. She was looking for one for Christmas for you.
So whose idea was it, really, when we decided to go on with the Back to the Future? Because we were discussing it with the girls here after the last horror show that they did.
Yeah.
Who was it that
spoke? It was mine.
Oh, it was you.
It was mine.
Good idea.
Yay, Tressa. I happen to like these movies, so yeah. I'm not a big 80s person, but I can watch them now, and they don't actually look old.
No, they've held up.
I really like this. I watched them. And it doesn't look like it was filmed how many years ago?
Over 25, yeah.
Yeah, almost 30 years ago. It really doesn't.
Because it's not an 80s movie, per se, where everybody's dressed in neon and side ponytails and
but even the quality.
Exercising. Like, they were dressed like we did in the 80s, which was just, I don't know, jeans and a t-shirt.
Yeah. But I mean, like, even the quality of the movies, I'm watching it and I'm looking at it going, wow, this still looks like it was just made.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure, so, you know, if they redid it, which I hope they never, ever do.
No, the special effects are still exactly where they need to be.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, I'm sure they could redo a couple things here and there, but really, it still looks awesome. A
couple things would look cool in 3D, and I don't say that about a lot of movies, but like...
Well, like the time travel.
The time travel would look cool in 3D.
The shark from Jaws 3D in Back to the Future 2.
That would be funny.
That would be hilarious.
Yeah, that would be good.
The whole train thing.
Now, you also rewatched these, right, Mary?
I did, yeah.
And how partial are you to the first one? Like, how does that one stand out for you?
Well, the first one was obviously the one I've seen the most, because I find that that's the one that I would replay on TV and stuff.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't know. I think that might be why I like that one the best. I don't know, though. I mean, like, it's... I feel like the graphics and things like that, like, they were actually pretty good. I was actually surprised. I felt like in the 80s it would be kind of cheesy. I really expected it to be really cheesy and that the things wouldn't hold up, but they actually did really well. So, I mean, I don't know. I like that one the best.
Yeah, I think they were really ahead of their time with it. What do you think?
I do, too.
Yeah.
Even the story was pretty original. Kid accidentally gets sent back to the 50s and messes up his parents' first meeting, which, that's a great idea.
It really is. Yeah, for some people. It definitely should occur. Others, maybe not.
I highly agree with that one.
Yeah. Yeah, some people just need to have their brother's head fade off of the picture.
Well, maybe if their brother was Jimmy Olsen from the Superman movie, sure.
And you know what? Out of all the years I've watched these movies and loved them and just sat back and enjoyed them, it wasn't until this rewatching, I watched them last week, that I realized that Mark McClure was actually Marty McFly's brother.
Yeah, he was Dave, man.
I had no clue. All of these years, loving the Superman movies and loving the Back to the Future movies, oh my God.
Separately.
Yeah. Yeah.
That'd be a great crossover.
Yeah. And just all of a sudden, it was a, whoa, wait a minute, Jimmy Olsen is Marty McFly's brother. My mind is just blown now because really, he was a kid reporter. And now, he works at McDonald's.
Yes.
I wear suits to work every day. What?
Well, that's after the timeline's altered, obviously.
Mm-hmm. I forgot about the 80s McDonald's uniform, too.
Yeah. You know, the 90s uniform was not that different. Because I wore the 90s McDonald's uniform, and yeah, it was not that impressive. The hat was better, but everything else was pretty much the same.
Cool. So we're all different ages here. Does everyone remember their first thoughts and impressions, and how did you discover the movie?
Well, I have an interesting story with the impact that the first movie had on me, but why don't we start with the ladies before I get into that? Tressa, what about you? Like, the first time you saw the first one?
I don't know exactly when I saw the first one, but my dad was a big movie buff. He loved watching the different movies. I grew up on Star Wars and Star Trek and James Bond and...
MASH.
You know, MASH, yes. Big, huge MASH fan. Huge James Bond fan. I grew up with all these things. My dad sat me down at the age of 7 and said, hey, you want to watch Jaws on TV tonight? Oh, okay. So, I mean, I'm pretty sure my first interaction with... Back to the Future was probably with my dad because of this. That was kind of our little bonding moment, I guess. So I could probably say that's what it is. I don't remember as a kid watching it. I've kind of blocked out the childhood, but I'm sure I was probably quite young and probably saw it close to when it came out. I don't remember either, like, when I started watching the other ones, but... The second one just happens to be my favorite. First one, obviously, is, like, the big favorite, but it's the first one. Yeah. But out of the three, I probably like to watch the second one most.
Yeah, your dad does really enjoy movies and stuff. That's one thing that I actually dig about your dad is that he's the only guy in his 60s that I know that will still sit down and watch cartoons on his own. Like, it's not uncommon to show up with our little guy and get inside and there's...
My dad is already sitting there with their cartoons ready for Zane.
Yeah, Cowboy Kenny is sitting there watching Scooby-Doo. And then you say, oh, did you just put that on? And he's like, no, I've had it on for an hour.
Cool. He's waiting. He knows what Zane likes to watch. And he's waiting, and they watch, yeah, they watch the old cat. Like, my kid actually likes the old Casper movies, too. So, I can say that I probably got into these because of my dad. Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
What about you, Mara?
Well, when these first came out, I was like a baby. So, I definitely didn't see them in theaters.
Oh, yeah,
like
you
that.
Were new.
You're the youngest.
Yeah.
Yeah, you are the youngest. Damn it.
So... I did not see them in theaters. I'm pretty sure, like, when I don't remember if I watched it with my parents. I might have. I remember my parents used to, like, rent movies, like, things like that, like Indiana Jones and stuff like that. I'd watch with them. But I'm pretty sure that probably the first time I watched it was, like, a TBS rerun. You know how TBS always plays in movies?
Yep.
Yeah, in the 90s, I'm pretty
sure. Late 90s was TBS, because it was something else before that.
Yeah.
Yeah, or before that, because but I'm pretty sure that's what happened. It's one of those TV stations I watched with the commercials and everything, totally edited. So I'm pretty sure that was the first time I'd seen them. I'm pretty sure I've seen all three that way.
Definitely. That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely movies they play on TV a lot. And my first exposure to the first one was on TV because they played it like all summer long, the summer of 86 and 87. So it was always on TV. And I had watched it for the first time one of those summers, sitting at home watching TV. It was like a Saturday afternoon. I'm like, oh, Michael J. Fox. Oh, I love watching him in Family Ties. He's got this movie. I'm going to watch it. And it was just instantly like, wow. Because I, you know, being a kid that loved science and, you know, there's like a swashbuckling element to this movie without any swashbuckling whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Just that sense of adventure, right? And I really got right into it and loved it and... ended up melting my remote control car because I tried to reenact the sequence at the end.
Nice.
He did.
Yeah, I, after watching that movie, it was just, I loved inventing things. I loved building things and fixing things. Still do. And got into a situation where it was a, wow, this was really cool. They put a hook on the back of the car and they put a really high electrical charge to it and it went through time. 7 and 8 year old, no, I guess I was 8 or 9 years old, so I wasn't, I should have been smarter, but I wasn't, because I was very juvenile, and, yeah, I thought for sure I could recreate the fire trails, and I took my remote control car, and I took the antenna and mounted it to, I put a bracket into the back of the remote control car, and wrapped the antenna around it and created the hook, and I ran wires to posts across either side of the sidewalk, and hooked up some batteries that I had found in the garage, didn't know if they were alive or not, and they were alive, because when I drew the chalk thing on the sidewalk when rope start, just like Doc Brown did on the road, and I lined it up, and I had everything ready, and I had a little block in front of my remote control car, and I put it on so I could build up the speed, and I had the wheels turning, and then I lifted the block and let it go, and the wires hit with the antenna, and there were sparks everywhere. And the remote control car never worked again, and there was no fire trails that chased it after. And I have vivid memories of it because it was just sparks everywhere. Because yeah, there was juice in those batteries, and wow, it was exciting. I was like, wow, I did it! Oh, yeah,
well, you just reminded me of something equally dumb that my friend Colin and I did that summer after seeing the movie. We took some gasoline.
Oh, no.
Wow!
Down to this trail by his house, and lit to simulate the fire trails, and almost burned our feet.
yeah
but we were singing Back in Time while we did it, so it was all good.
Oh, you know what, okay, that's okay then. That makes sense. So yeah, both of us actually did something incredibly stupid involving what could potentially be very hazardous with fire.
Yes,
thanks to that movie. So that's a wow.
So, Kat, tell us about your first impressions and how you discovered the first Back to the Future.
First impression, boys are idiots. I was a Michael J. Fox fan, so I said, Mom, we need to go see this movie. And she brought me to said movie. I think my sister came with us. And the movie theater is no longer there, and it's now the parking lot of a Walmart. That was back in 85.
Yeah, I know. The parking lot of my favorite theater turned into the parking lot of the new theater. So, yeah. Actually, no, it's a bar now, but oh well.
But yeah, that's when I saw it, and there was no, oh, let's rewind it and watch it again because it was so awesome. It was like, oh my God, let's buy another ticket and watch it again. And we didn't. But yeah, so I saw it in the theater.
and then had to try to remember all the cool lines and stuff.
Now, you saw it in the theater too, didn't you, Jay?
3 times.
Wow.
I went with my friends the first time and loved it. And then I had to take my mom to it. My mom's usually cool with movies, so I took her, and she loved it. And third time I went, I had my first date with a girl in the movies.
That's a great movie to have been your first date.
Yeah, yeah. I pretended I hadn't seen it yet so that we could go.
That's like right up there with, it's like saying that Star Wars was your first date with a girl. Like, there, it's, you know, a trilogy of that generation, right? Like,
yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
And then, because of this movie, I became like a big fan of time travel. It's my favorite kind of story, whether it's in comic books or movies or TV.
Like Star Trek.
Yeah, yeah. So there's some time travel in Star Trek, and yeah. So it had a big impact on me.
Yeah, like you said, it's that the whole time travel aspect really wasn't that known then. Like, nobody had really explored it. In this way.
A little bit, but nothing major.
Just enough to say, hey, we went back in time, or hey, we're in the future, blah, 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 blah. This one actually went both ways and explained why you were there and what repercussions can actually occur. It was...
Yeah.
And even went to an alternate...
Well, that was when we get into the second dimension. One, yeah.
The alternate threw me off. I gotta tell you, I got a little confused when that occurred.
Well, we'll definitely be talking about the second one more
it's
with that.
Be the wrong year. All right, we're gonna take a
Except
quick break.
H.G. Wells' Time Machine. I'm just throwing that out there.
That, yeah. That
and,
was pretty excellent.
And Time After Time, starring Malcolm McDowell. And Mary Steenburgen, who was in Back to the Future 3.
See, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I still have to watch Time After Time, but Time Machine, we gotta do a whole other show on that, man.
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll be back with some more Back to the Future talk with John and K-Stu and the Girls of the Monster Review Show. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned, loyal listeners. There's more We Got the Geek still to come.
Face front, true believers. John Ballmer is an independent artist and illustrator. He has contributed to several indie comics published by Alterna Comics and more, and is able to draw in many styles and genres. John also does commission work in sizes ranging from 3x5 inches to 11x17 inches and even larger. Add some original art to your personal collection or surprise someone with a drawing just for them. Check out his work at drawnbyjohn.com and his Facebook group, Drawn by John, The Art of John J. C. Ballmer.
All right, we are back. I'm sitting here with John, Tressa, Mara, Kathy, the cats, and the dog. Talking Back to the Future and what an impact it had on us as young men and young women.
Yep. Definitely had a huge impact for us, I think. Pretty good group of people to be talking about these films.
Definitely, and this is one of those movies that I hope never, ever gets remade.
Honestly,
I would be angry.
This is one of those movies, like, with a lot of other movies, the remakes are, like...
They're bad.
Yeah, they're no good. But the originals had qualities that needed to be done differently, right?
Yeah.
And there's my phone going off, so we'll turn that down.
With some lovely flute music. Yeah. Sam Fears pan flute.
It's okay if somebody calls, it's the Imperial March. But, yeah, like these, with other movies, you can look at them and say, yeah, you know, something could be redone. And then they redo it, and it's crap. With these movies, you look at these movies, and you can't do anything differently. Look great. Like, the special effects were far beyond what...
It would be like redoing Star Wars. I personally cannot stand the new edited version. If I wanted it edited,
the special
then they
editions.
Should have made it that way. I don't want to see it redone, but the same movie with a CGI monster that wasn't supposed to be there.
Yes.
That's just as good as my Twinkie rant.
Yes,
okay?
Darn it.
Yeah, she has a sensitive spot for some remakes of Star Wars and such, but...
I have a very sensitive spot for remakes.
Remakes in general.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, these movies you just can't remake. You really can't.
It's true. Were you aware that the original Time Machine in the script was supposed to be a fridge?
Yes.
Yes.
But they didn't want a bunch of kids climbing into fridges?
Right.
Which makes sense.
I was one of those kids that would have done that.
You would have done it. Probably I would have, too. So.
Oh, I'm...
And I was 15 at the time.
So. I'm just going to go back to boys are idiots.
Yeah. I'm sure I would have climbed into a fridge. Because I did get myself stuck in a dryer once. Oh, I was small enough to fit.
You right? win.
Yeah. Well, I was watching the extras, some of the extras with John, and that was the one part they were talking about, that they wanted it to be a fridge, but then thought, well, it would make more sense if it was a car to be able to be mobile.
Yeah, it's true.
I wonder how they would have done that. Like, set it to a certain temperature, and then all of a sudden you just go into space? Yeah. Like, I don't know how they would have...
You go in the fridge, you come out the freezer or something?
I'm not really sure how that works.
And
how
they would get the lightning from the clock tower to the fridge.
Yeah, well, what was the plan? Wheel it out, or...?
So, originally, the way he was going to get home from the 50s, they were going to take their time device over to a nuclear testing site.
Oh, my.
Yeah, I guess that was in a lot of the drafts of the script, too.
I'm glad they didn't do it.
Yeah, me too.
No, they saved it for Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skulls.
Let's not go there.
Well, that's
there's the fridge and there's the nuclear testing site.
Yeah, it is Spielberg, though.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's the Spielberg.
He held on to that for 20 years.
He did. He was like, remember that old Back to the Future thing? Let's throw Indy in there. makes a lot of sense.
It does, actually.
Oh, man. It's true.
Call him.
No.
Hey, Spielberg. This is what you did. We figured it out.
Yeah, let's get him on Skype.
Yeah, you happened to find that piece of paper, didn't you, Jeff?
Actually, I got one thought. I don't know if you've got this, boiling in your brain, but what did anybody think of the car, since we just brought that up?
It was ugly.
I thought DeLoreans were the coolest thing in the world.
So did I. Like I thought the DeLorean was like the greatest car of the 80s.
The doors on it reminded me of wings.
When I found out that you could get those hinges for any car, I almost did it to my Dodge Shadow.
Really?
We wouldn't have to worry about parking in that lot every day at work. We would squeeze right in, open those doors right up, and we're out. Come on.
I still want a DeLorean.
Me too.
It was ugly, but it fit so well because it was almost that very clunky looking vehicle.
Well, I like Doc Brown's explanation of why they chose the DeLorean, the stainless steel construction. You know, it's just every element about the car in its natural state fit. Mm-hmm. What did you think of the car, Mara?
I liked it. I did like it. I was partial to the doors. I was partial to the back, the way the back looked, too.
Right on.
Yeah, it did. That looked cool.
And that was very nice in the back.
I really was really super surprised, and I don't, like, I was a teenager. It's not like I followed, like, the economic developments of major corporations, but I was so surprised when they went bankrupt. I'm like, it's a Back to the Future car!
Yeah.
It's like, as soon as I can afford a car, I'm buying one. Like, why isn't everybody else?
Yeah, I always wanted one, too, but, like, overall, it was...
They're probably not very comfortable. They're rather small looking.
Well, it was a shit car, actually.
I don't know. I've never actually really seen one, I don't think.
Yeah, they were pretty shitty. They weren't overly reliable, but they're, I don't know.
You know why? It's because the engine was in the back. Right?
Well, a lot of cars have engines in the back. Like, some Porsches have the engine in the back.
I think it was the actual design of it, though. Like, the way they designed it with the engine in the back, the front of it, I don't think was proportionate properly. I don't think it...
Yeah, because if you look at a Beetle, the engine is in the back, trunk's in the front, and the car's so small that it works.
I think there was something. This is bringing up memories of school. Yeah. I feel like there was something here with this.
Talking about weight distribution.
I think it was, like, a weight distribution issue. I'm pretty sure I recall this occurring.
I love that Mara... possibly wrote a thesis on this in the day. Like, wait a minute.
Not thesis.
We've researched this.
But I feel like I've had some research on this.
Think about it this way. What she's saying is think about a woman with really big boobs. Top heavy. Front heavy. There you go.
How does she not fall over?
I don't know. I still want a damn DeLorean
of
my own.
Man. So, what was your favorite scene? This question is for everybody here.
You know mine.
I think I have the same favorite scene as
really?
You.
Really?
Yeah.
When he's at the dance, and he's playing Earth Angel, and it's all, like, starting to come together, and the picture's not fading anymore, and he just, like, gets that burst of energy. I get so excited and giddy, and I just start giggling. I just think that is the best thing in the world.
Really?
Uh-huh.
And then the parents kiss for the first time. Okay. That gets you a little misty-eyed.
Yeah, but when he's like, BAM! And he just, like, gets into the song, and... Earth Angel's playing, and every time I hear that song, I was like, Marty's alive, he's not fading away, because his hand was transparent, it was getting scary.
It was
that one, followed by the Johnny B. Goode scene that...
Mm. The Johnny B. Goode scene was good, but It was no Earth Angel.
Johnny B. Goode was better than the Earth Angel part, but I see your point. I get, like, that really is a moment of, wow, yeah! You're really like, rooting for
it's
him.
It's gonna happen! Yeah. They're fixing it! Fixing what Calvin Klein has ruined.
You're posting this question to all of us?
Yes. So, go ahead, John.
Well, favorite scene, I think, for me was... I really love the part... Basically, from the moment that that Crispin Glover's character, so George McFly, opens that bottle of pop for Marty, and he starts feeding him lines to send in to the girl, you know,
yeah.
My density has popped me to you, because he can't say it right. Like, yeah. I was that geek who couldn't say anything like that. I had the great line, but could never deliver it.
Yeah.
And then that goes right into the skateboard car chase.
Oh, yes.
Right around the square, around the clock tower and stuff.
Yeah.
That was probably my favorite scene overall.
That was a great scene.
It just did. That was that moment of high adventure for me. It was like, wow, look at what he's doing. And this is so exciting. And like, really, this is transforming what all these people are seeing. And what, you know, did he invent the skateboard because of this all of a sudden? You know, like the repercussions that could happen from what went on there. Just a fun sequence.
Yeah.
And also, I really love Biff's car.
Which ended up in manure.
A few times.
Well, just...
Once in the first movie.
Once in the first movie.
Once in each movie. Show, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a tannin in shit in each movie.
Yep.
In the Jones family shit, basically. Yes. But I never understood the purpose of... Why, in the 50s, is there a horse manure truck in Hill Valley right at the square? That made no sense to me, but I went with it.
Gardening.
We'll go with that.
It's a lot of gardening.
Yeah.
Wow. It was a nice garden around the clock tower. But yeah, that's my favorite sequence was the skateboarding part there.
Hmm.
Mara?
Well, that's a tough one. I liked the dance, but I would actually say I liked the part when he did, when they finally at the end, he went back to the future and his family was all different and everything was all changed. I kind of liked that. Like, they gave it a happier ending.
Aww.
I don't know. I like the happy endings. And the fact that his family was all weird at the beginning and then at the end they're all like... happy, and they all, like, have jobs.
They all had jobs before.
I know, but, like, better jobs. Like, he's got the suit and everything.
Yeah. Careers.
They had careers.
And he turned Biff into a wuss.
Yeah, that was good, too.
With his tracksuit.
The whole future, I liked that, the way it all looked different.
There's only one problem. Like, and that's great that you love that sequence, but there's only one problem that nobody ever thinks about.
That Marty's not in it?
No, with that sequence.
What?
Everybody's lives changed, and everybody's lives is great.
He shouldn't remember.
What happened to Uncle Joey? Jailbird Joey.
Oh, the jailbird. I just assumed
he never find out if he actually got out of jail.
They mentioned him a little bit in the second one.
Yes.
The second one?
But in the alternate.
In the alternate universe.
Yeah, they say so he's in jail in that one.
Yeah, and like...
Well, yeah, when we just rewatched it, I was like, what happened to the uncle in jail? And I'm like... And I know I was on my phone for part of it, so I was like, maybe I just missed that part.
No, they never say if he got out of jail or not. But yeah, I can see how you like that one. I had to throw that in there because I always wondered.
You know what? I was actually wondering that too. That's why I remember it when it came up again in the other movie. Because I was like, oh, maybe he's still in jail.
Tirsa?
I actually like a very quiet part of the movie. I really love, just from an actor standpoint... I really love the scene between Leah Thompson and Michael J. Fox when they're in her bedroom back in the past, and they're talking about his underwear, and this is when she identifies him as Calvin Klein. The acting in that is just pure genius. It is so sweet and
innocent.
Yeah. And yes, it is a mother hitting on what technically is her son, but it's not creepy. It's not going past boundaries. Yes. It is really cute. And you're just kind of sitting there going, oh my God, this is weird, but so sweet.
Because she really... It that it's a teenage girl
liking a teenage
crush on a cute teenage boy, and then... Like, we're just sitting there in the know going, it's your son.
Exactly. And we're identifying, obviously, with the Marty McFly character going, oh, this is your mother. Whereas that, her character, obviously, had no clue. Yeah. This is just a boy who has his name printed on the underwear, Calvin Klein. I love that scene.
It really is a great scene. And the part where, you know, his grandmother calls Lorraine. And I like the way the camera was positioned in that sequence, where they get up, she goes to run to the door and yells, "Quick, put your pants on!" Throws the pants at him. He catches them. If you look in the background, she's in the mirror looking back before she goes out the door.
Yeah.
It was a brilliant delivery of, keeping with that teenage girl with the crush on the new guy in town.
Yeah.
But, if you blink, you miss that she actually does take that second to look back, because every teenage girl has to get that one quick last look before she moves on somewhere else, right?
No, it's just, I just loved it. I thought Leah Thompson was amazing in these movies. And that scene just always made me giggle. I loved it.
And actually, the recreation of that scene in every version.
Yeah, yeah.
She's brilliant.
She's absolutely amazing in
this. Like, right through. Yeah. That was a good choice.
Yeah.
And it is one of the pivotal moments in every single scene, every single movie, is that one scene between those two characters.
Mom, is that you?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Which, yeah. That line happens just way too many times.
Yeah.
But it's perfect.
And I particularly like it in the second one when he delivers it as his own daughter. Mom,
is that you?
Yeah.
It's funny.
So, let's take another break and get into some Back to the Future Part 2 discussion. We'll be right back.
I'm done with that.
Hold on, true believers. There's more We Got the Geek after these words.
Kristen Hunter is a Canadian artist specializing in polymer clay creations. Kristen is a geek at heart, and most of her creations are nerd-themed. She makes everything from Captain America earrings to video game-inspired necklaces and everything else in between. Check out Kristen's amazing work at www.wasabeads.com or visit her Facebook group, Wasabeads Custom Creations.
All right, I am back here doing our Back to the Future show. With K-Stew and Don't Call Him Chicken Balmer and Tressa and Mara.
Don't Call Him Chicken? Yeah, we're still at Chicken at this point.
Yeah. So, Back to the Future 2 came out in 89. Pretty much the same cast, except for no Crispin Glover.
And, because he was a douche.
Yeah. And Elizabeth Shue replaced Claudia Wells as Jennifer Parker. Immediately takes place after the first film, after the big, you gotta come back with me, something's gotta be done with your kids.
Which they reshot that scene perfectly to fit Elizabeth Shue in.
Yeah.
Like, perfectly.
Oh, yeah. Came out in 89. They filmed this one and part 3 at the same time. Part 2 ended on a cliffhanger. I know at the time, a lot of people didn't like that.
It was tough because
I thought it was great, but a lot of people thought that was controversial.
You knew the third one was coming, but it was a really, you're going to leave us stranded right there like that?
Yeah. Ending, though. Great last scene, though.
Yeah, it really was. And the second one is, it's not my favorite, but it's my second favorite. Like, everybody loves the first one. It's obvious.
See,
the first
one. I don't know a lot of people that like the second one the most. I do, because there's a lot of great stuff in this movie. First of all, you finally get to see the future.
Yeah.
Not only that, you get to see an alternate 1985 because Marty screwed up the timeline.
Well, teenage boys do that in the 80s.
And then the part of the movie that I thought was brilliant is they go back to 1955, and like in the background of a lot of scenes, you get to see a lot of the stuff from the first movie while they're doing new stuff.
And that goes with how original the first one was. They kept that going, that theme of originality, that nothing had else been done. They actually go back into the first movie.
Yeah, it was great.
And it was so well done, and so well delivered and handled, and, like, really, the people who storyboarded this and really planned those shots out, and just being able to place everything so that you know what's happened. You know where you are, but you're like, wow, I wonder whose eyes we're looking through now from this angle. And it's... That was definitely one thing that really set the second movie apart from any other movie from, like, a 10-year time frame on either side of it. It really stood out. And I think that's why I liked the second one so much, to go back to the theater, 3 days later and see it again.
Oh, yeah, I saw it with my mom. Maybe a couple days after that, I took my first trip to London, Ontario, because my friend Scott was going to Western there. Got off the train, the first thing I said, let's go see Back to the Future 2 tonight.
Yeah, I don't remember who I saw it with the first time. I honestly have no idea who I was with, but I know the second time I was with my grandparents and my sister. And my grandparents didn't watch movies like this. They're, you know, wonderful people. And
was it the Highlander grandparents?
No.
Okay.
No, these are the churchy grandparents.
Okay.
Who don't watch action movies or adventure movies or anything like that. So, you know, anytime the word shit was out or anything like that, it was, you know, that was kind of bad. But yeah. It was a fun experience, and it was a fun time to actually go to the movies with my grandparents. And I really, really enjoyed it. I went with them the second time because I was like, Grandma, Grandpa, we have to go see this. It was, like I said, being able to go back into the first movie, it just hadn't been done like that. I don't think it had ever been done at all, but to be done that way was just, wow. It blew my mind. And
yeah.
The future was awesome.
Yes. I was watching it the other day with Diana, and I thought it was funny that future is only 2 years away.
Oh, it was 2015, wasn't it?
Yeah. Diana is so excited for 2015, and she cannot wait until she gets her hoverboard.
Yeah.
She talks about it at least once a week.
Well, Mattel is still around.
But I remember when this movie was brand new, and that future was like 30 years away.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Guess what,
and you
kind
of did the math, and you were like, oh my God, I'm going to be over 40.
Yeah.
See, I didn't do the math back then. I just thought like that was too far in the future for me to think about, because I was, well, what, 89, so I was only 11 or 12 years old then.
Do you guys think it's really funny that technically the future in real life looks more like the alternate
little
side
bit
than the future?
Yeah, a little
future
bit, yeah.
Somebody screwed up.
Yeah, somebody went back and screwed things up in the 50s.
Yeah.
And
damn,
now we have these ridiculously huge casinos run by assholes and, you know, unhappy women with huge breasts and crime and bald teachers that shoot at people. And wow, we are in the alternate.
Yeah.
And another great idea for a movie, Marty gets an almanac in the future to place some bets when they get back to 85, and old Biff in the future wreaks havoc with it.
I really like that. And really, like, out of anyone here, would any of us not have thought about doing that?
I was going to say, I liked it because it was the truth.
Yeah.
Anybody who has the chance to go into the future, grab a sports almanac, and come back.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm doing
it. Yeah.
Absolutely.
You're doing it.
Absolutely, yeah, there's no hesitation. But the fact that old Biff, now, when he comes back and he drops, like, after he comes back from going to the past and giving himself the almanac, it's a very hard-to-watch scene when he gets out of the DeLorean and he busts his cane, because if you don't really pay attention, I think he actually, like, kills himself accidentally. If you watch the scene where he breaks the cane getting out of that DeLorean, the head of the cane falls in, the sharp part of that cane stabs him in the gut, and he collapses by the garbage cans down the road.
Yeah.
I think he killed himself there.
Well, in the deleted scene on the DVD, he just vanished because history was changing.
Well, that's weird.
Yeah.
Because he was still technically be around.
Yeah.
But yeah, that one was one that I, watching it again after, you know, I watch it all the time, but going back and watching it closely this time, I never noticed that before. Was something that kind of stuck out, but it was so great to be able to sit down and watch this again. I love this one. It was so much fun. It kept with that fun of the first one.
Well, I liked it. A lot of people I do know, it's not their favorite because of the fact the ad had the cliffhanger. I love the ending. I'm sorry. It's amazing.
Great.
You see the first ending happen, and then he comes back right away. I mean, imagine Doc Brown going, I just sent you off in a car. What the hell are you doing back here?
That was
awesome. I mean, that was amazing to me.
And he passes out. The end.
It was perfect for me because, you knew the third one was coming. There was a cliffhanger in the first one. Why were people so upset?
It really was only like a 6-month wait, I think. But even, it seemed like forever.
It did. It seemed like it was ridiculously long time.
I have no recollection.
It's no Star Wars 3-year wait back then.
But right.
I don't like it.
But it was the same kind of delivery. You know, the second movie, you're kind of stuck wondering what the hell just happened, what's going on, and then you have to wait.
I just liked it because it was so busy. The first one was very, yes, he goes back and it's all that. And then he comes back. Okay. Nice, clean cut.
Yeah. Very linear. Yeah.
The second one was like, well, what can we do? And they went everywhere. They did everything. They just made it crazy. Because the third one, again, was very cut dry. We're here, we're going here, and we're going to come back here.
Yeah.
So it was nice to have that middle, you know, like, really, oh my goodness, what's going on? This is so crazy. And
like a tighten your sphincter in your seat, because you're like, oh my God, they just went backwards and forwards and forwards and backwards. And then now they're in the backwards, watching the backwards that we already saw backwards, but we're watching it forward.
Okay. But for the normal person, it was confusing.
But it was good because it was one of those things that, I mean, if you were to go anywhere in time, I mean, any little thing you can do can totally screw it up. And that was the middle movie. It had to be that way. If it was cut and dry, it would have been the most boring movie ever.
It was the Empire Strikes Back of the franchise.
It was. It really was. Absolutely. And you liked the second one, didn't you, Mary?
Yeah, I liked the second one.
It's not your favorite, but you do like it.
I like it. I liked the way they did the future. Like, they had the dogs walking themselves, and yes, the flying cars, and the hoverboards, and the police with their things on, and the virtual shark, and I don't know. I mean, and the one time I'm watching something, and this is, like, this is 2 years away. There's no way, obviously, it's going to happen in 2 years, but
there better be a Cafe 80s in 2 years.
Yeah, that, I see
I
that.
Would go there.
There you go, guys. Open it up.
There Cafe should be a Cafe 80s now.
While we're talking about that, by the way, I had 80s Trivial Pursuit. Did you guys ever play that?
I'm in. No, but I'm in.
Oh, 80s Trivial Pursuit.
Just I'm so not. They're going to crush us.
I would be terrible. But,
game night with Mara.
But next time, I'll bring it.
All right.
There you go.
Yeah, next time we do taco night at my house, we're going to play 80s Trivial Pursuit and talk Back to the Future again.
There cool we go. Idea. Okay.
So,
I'm just throwing it out there that we may or may not just have the microphone off to the side, recording all of it.
That's okay.
I can get some really good sound clips.
All right, so I'm going to go around the room and ask everyone's favorite scene again. And it's easy. My favorite scene is easy. It's right from the part where Marty sees the DeLorean disappear and he thinks Doc is dead. And all of a sudden, Joe Flaherty shows up with a letter. Like that whole, the Doc's alive, he's in the Old West, but he's alive. Then he runs into town and sees him disappear from the first movie and loved it.
Yeah, it's pretty badass.
Yeah.
That's a good choice.
Casey?
I haven't seen it in a while, so it's probably not like one of the best scenes ever, but when he grabs the hoverboard and has the whole chase scene and then realizes that hoverboards don't work on water.
That's
like
great.
That whole thing is just kind of awesome. And then seeing, like, behind-the-scenes production on how they got it to hover just makes me happy with the little wires and stuff.
That's a fun scene. And
yeah.
That's also the first movie I think I ever saw Jason Scott Lee in. He's the one that actually yells that you can't go across water unless you've got power.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize it was him for the longest time. And then I was watching it again last week, and it was like, oh my God, that really is him. I thought it was him. It's his voice, right?
And let's not forget that Billy Zane is in Biff's gang.
Yeah. Yeah. He was in Biff's gang for the first one and the second one, but not in the third.
No.
But that was fun as well. You know, to see him with the old person makeup at the casino, that was always fun.
Yeah.
Come on, son. We can do this the easy way or the hard way.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite scene, John?
I have a lot of favorite scenes from this one. I really enjoy the sequence at the McFly home in the Hilldale housing developments where he plays, like, himself and his kids, and they're all interacting with each other around the kitchen table, because that was just an amazing piece of film special effects back then. I really enjoyed that sequence, but I think my number one favorite is when he shows up at the Enchantment Under the Sea dance, and he's watching himself play Johnny B. Goode.
Yeah.
And then he takes out the thugs by crawling across the top of the stage and dropping the sandbags on them.
Yeah.
Just and that whole sequence where he's back in that first movie watching himself.
Yeah.
And he just sits there and realizes, yeah, it's pretty good.
And I love the disguise he picked, too.
Yep.
The leather jacket.
The leather jacket, the hat. I love the walkie-talkies.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably my favorite sequence. Very closely followed by the hoverboard, Biff's car, and the tunnel sequence.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Really great sequence as well.
But the look on his face when he realizes he has that whole tunnel to go skate through.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that was a great part. But yeah, Johnny B. Goode watching himself play the guitar. And actually, like, who would ever get that opportunity to really sit back and see yourself play live?
Yeah.
You could listen to yourself or watch a movie of yourself. But you could listen to yourself play live? Like, that'd be pretty badass. Mara?
Oh, that, yeah, this is another tough one. You guys mentioned some really great scenes. What sticks out for me, actually, and I don't even know if this is the greatest scene, but I thought it was funny, when they all got in the car at the beginning, and then he uses those eye lasers to knock out the girlfriend.
Oh, yes.
And then he's like, she wasn't sent into our plan anyway, and I was just, I thought that was really funny. And then they take her and they put her on the random porch out in this now ghetto, because they thought it was her porch. Yeah. They put her on this random ghetto porch in the middle of...
Bars on the windows.
Yeah, he's like, I don't remember the bars on the windows, and you just know, this is like, it's like the turning point, this is going to be bad. So, I mean, I don't know, I thought that was funny. I liked that whole scene there.
It is a fun scene, and you're right, mm-hmm. It is very much a turning point where you... Yeah. You first get the impression that you're in that alternate timeline.
Something's not right. Yeah.
That's good.
I'm very conflicted with this one about my favorite scenes because there's two. Actually three. There is the, of course, the moment of the son and the mother all of a sudden appearing up again, and yeah, he wakes up and she's got very large boobs, and it's a very startling scene because he's just like, whoa, that's not even close to who my mom is. The second one would be definitely your pick, John, of watching him back in the 50s doing everything while he's watching himself, and that was just awesome because it was like they overlaid like three different movies. It was great. But my actual favorite part that most people hated was the ending. I love the ending.
That's a great last scene, though, man.
Love the ending. I didn't get to rewatch these movies, unfortunately, a little busy this week. But I did get to rewatch that ending when you were watching them, John. Mm-hmm. And I love that ending. I love watching the doc's face when he's just like, oh, hey, wait a minute. You know, it's just that realization of it's not cluing in. I just sent you back. And it was almost just like this. You could see the doc just wilting away. Like, what happened? I just sent you back. This isn't right. So that's my favorite. It's the ending.
You know who's a great character in that movie? I think he took that guy's wallet.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
I think he took his wallet.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take one more break, and when we come back, I think we'll get into Back to the Future Part 3.
Excellent.
Excellent. We'll be right back.
And now, a word from our sponsors.
Sketchbook Comics and Games is a store that has something awesome for everyone. In addition to selling comics, board games, and action figures, there are tables for open gaming. Wednesday nights, Sketchbook features game night starting at 6 p.m. Friday through Sunday, Sketchbook is the place to be for Magic the Gathering. The store is located at 224 Glenridge Avenue, Unit 9 in St. Catharines. Come on down for all your geek and comic book needs.
All right, we're back, and we're talking Back to the Future. We're going to talk about Back to the Future 3 a little bit, third in the trilogy. Pretty much the same cast again, joined by Mary Steenburgen as Clara.
Yep.
The Doc falls in love in this one.
Which was a shocker.
Yep. The Doc can dance.
The Doc can dance. Yeah.
So it's in the Old West. Again, it takes place immediately after the previous film. Marty's got to go back to the Old West to rescue Doc. Otherwise, he's going to get shot in the back.
By Buford Tannen.
Yeah.
Over a matter of $80.
Yes. Yes.
Yep.
So
classic.
Is this one your favorite?
This one is my favorite. Just because I love the Old West. I grew up watching Westerns, you know, that my grandparents liked, and I really enjoyed, you know, the Lone Ranger and stuff like that. So Clint Eastwood movies, which really plays a heavy role in this one in particular. I love that it was all of a sudden in the Old West, because I love everything about the Old West, but yeah, Buford Tannen was just such a badass. Yes, he was stupid, but he was a badass cowboy who I just really dug, and I thought it was the best portrayal of the Tannen element out of the whole series. And I love that Marty was now so far out of his element that he really didn't fit at all in this movie, and he was just trying to get out.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. I loved it. Absolutely loved it.
Cass, how do you feel about this one?
I like this one even though I don't like Westerns. But I still like this one.
Cool.
That is all? That is all?
I didn't rewatch it, so I don't really remember a lot of it.
Yeah.
I wish I would have rewatched it, but day jobs.
Yeah, this one, I only saw this one in the theater once.
Me too.
And, me too.
I never got back to see it a second time, but I loved it. It was, it still kept the excitement. It, you know, you've got the same adventure element. You know, it's got Tressa's favorite, you know, kind of sequence with the whole, you know, Marty and his, great-great-great-grandmother instead.
And he plays his own great-great-grandfather in this one.
Yeah. Yep.
Seamus.
He was doing all this before Eddie Murphy was, by the way.
So a good point here is every one of his relatives, future and past, look like him, except for the generation with Crispin Glover.
That was actually the issue that I had with part one, just to go back, that Marty was such a good friend that got them together, but they waited till their third kid to name their kid Marty, and they didn't realize that he looked just like Calvin Klein, but anyway.
Well, they probably didn't have pictures of Calvin Klein from back then, but...
You never forget what your first crush looks like.
Maybe that wasn't the first time she had parked, you know.
She didn't have posters of Michael J. Fox. She wouldn't have known what he looked like.
I don't know. This movie is definitely the one that stands out as my favorite. I love the Old West. I love that Doc now is set up as a blacksmith, because really what a perfect kind of cover to be an inventor. Back then, you've got a huge barn, you've got tons of workspace, access to all kinds of different tools and metalworking, stuff like that. And, you know, put a couple of shoes on horses, and apparently it's $75 to shoe a horse, so that's pretty good money back then, I would say.
That was really good money. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. We get to see the origin of the clock tower, which was pretty cool.
That was really cool. Yeah, I really dug that element, and, you know, we get to see ZZ Top.
Yes. We forgot to mention that you and I are big fans, but Huey Lewis was in the first movie.
Yeah, I don't know how we got past that. That was his very first on-screen role, like his first movie role.
And his first number one song was from that movie, "The Power of Love," my favorite song of all time.
Sorry, fellas, you're just too darn loud. Yeah, great
line.
Which
is hilarious because he's playing his song while he's saying you're too darn loud.
And it was actually a pretty good version of his song.
But yeah, ZZ Top is in this one. And they do the cool spinny guitar thing.
Yep. Or the spinny drum thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. There's so many great things about this movie. Like you said, Doc falls in love. And, you know, they go back to the Old West and, you know, everybody's really out of place. But you just see the origin of Hill Valley. And, you know, you get to see just little elements that you notice, but you don't really realize their importance until you go back and watch the other movies and just see how it all develops and builds up.
Yeah.
And the train, you know, what kid doesn't like watching a train?
Yeah.
Every kid loves trains, and this is a train that gets up to 88 miles an hour.
Yep. Which I'm going to go on record as saying it's one of the best sequences in the whole trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
The train chase at the end.
Yeah. Yeah, pushing the DeLorean with his own version of Presto logs.
That's so awesome.
Yeah. And
then he passes him the hoverboard, and that's all great.
Yeah, and we've totally just jumped right to the end of the movie already.
We did.
But it's like there's so many great things up until then. Like,
it was Christopher Lloyd's only on-screen kiss in his whole career.
Yeah, with Mary Steenburgen.
Yep.
As they were talking about Jules Verne.
Yes.
Which again, like I had read Jules Verne as a kid, so all of a sudden here I am watching a Back to the Future movie and they're talking about Jules Verne. And you know, I love 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea and Journey to the Center of the Earth. They were great books. I should actually get my hands on them again and reread them, like I've reread so many others. It was exciting to all of a sudden just have so much more of what I like tied into a movie that I loved. What did you guys think of the third one?
I fell asleep.
You fell asleep.
I'm sorry. I've seen it as a kid, but I didn't really remember it at all. So I went back to watch it, and I watched it late last night, and I watched the first like 30 minutes, and then I woke up at the end and I watched the last the train scene, which was awesome, obviously. So, I mean, of the three, I'd have to say that it would be my least favorite, because I didn't say
what. Because you only saw 30 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
You missed the whole West.
No. I seen the West. Like, I seen, like, the chase with the carriage and stuff. And
did you see the Frisbee part?
I don't think I've seen a Frisbee
part. Did you see the Wild Gunman
part? Oh, God, John. How about the montage of them trying to get the DeLorean up the 88 as well?
Oh, with the horses and... Yeah.
Oh, I seen the part with the horses, the DeLorean.
This is a team of the fastest horses in the world.
There's no way that was...
You're not going to get them up past 25, 30 miles an hour.
No.
Yeah, it's... I don't know. Every little detail in this movie I thought was great. They didn't overdo the West. They made it... Much like they did with every other aspect of the trilogy, everything done with the times seemed to fit. Nothing seemed like it, any element of it was wrong. It's like, you know, the people who were doing the set decoration and set design were really on the ball, making sure that everything looked right. I loved the saloon. Just the woodwork around the bar in the saloon and, you know, the plank wood floor. Like, every little detail was great. And the three old hecklers at the in the saloon, those guys, I got a soft spot for them. Those guys were awesome. I swear they must have been like, I think they were Disney voiceover actors.
Well, they've been in tons of Westerns, those guys. The one guy I recognized from Frank, Little House on the Prairie, actually.
Oh, wow. I watched that as a kid, too.
Yeah, and they've done a lot of work in Western movies. Couldn't name any off the top of my head right now, but there you go.
Yeah, I thought they were a fun element, and you know, Doc being in the saloon with that one shot of whiskey after his, you know, awful breakup with Clara.
Yeah,
you know, and he only has the one shot, and it does him in. Like, there's people out there like that. Maybe it doesn't hit him quite that fast, but it was fun.
Yeah.
There's just so much fun in this movie. Just like, it's like the fun started at the start of the first movie and then never ended. Like, the fun never actually stopped.
It's all one big movie, all three of them put together.
So. It really is, but you don't have the start of the fun gets more exciting, and then the fun ends. It's like the fun just never stops, and it, like, you want more, but you know that you'll never get it.
Yes.
What do you think of the third one, Tressa?
It was my least favorite out of them, but not by any means was it bad. I enjoyed the Old West. I do agree with you, John, that it was very well done because it was very minimalistic. They didn't overdo it, because the funny part of it was Michael J. Fox's character was overdone of what we thought the West would be, mm-hmm. right? So that made the joke funny. If they would have overdone the West, his outfit going into it just wouldn't have made any sense.
Right.
Whereas he stood out like a sore thumb. It was bad. Yeah. And it was perfect how bad it was. So I think they did a really good job. I mean, the set was awesome. Like, who wouldn't want to just hang around on that set all day and have some fun and, you know, ride that train and... It would be great. Yep. I mean, come on.
I would totally climb that clock tower.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. I'd climb up that and, like, sit in the circle where the clock should sit and just, like, spit on people and yell and drink. And I would carry... I would be a nuisance. I would get thrown in jail. Yeah.
That's funny. So, this was a really good topic you guys picked.
It really was. Yeah. Thanks to the Monster Gals for... Really yeah. wanting to get in on this one. It was, I really enjoyed being able to just, you know, like you said, you never needed an excuse to watch Back to the Future movies.
Oh, yeah, it stood the test of time. New generations are getting into this movie all the time. Like, Diana loves them.
Yeah.
Showed them to her for the first time last year. She quotes it sometimes.
I did ask her to be on the show today, and she refused.
You know what we need to? We need to track down the cartoon that came after the third one. But that's the cartoon actually picked up, you know, the end of the third one, the DeLorean's destroyed. Doc is still locked in the past with Clara. And, you know, you're kind of left with a down note. And then all of a sudden, the train reappears.
Yeah.
It's all done up to be the new time machine. And, you know, Doc's got, you know, he says, meet the family. Here's our boys.
I remember that.
Yeah. Well, Jules and Vern.
You meet them in the movie, right?
Yeah.
You meet Jules and Vern, but the only thing I remember off of that cartoon is the actual meeting of the children, because I just remember, I think it was Vern or something, one of them had a chip out of his tooth or something like that. So I don't know, I just seem to recall that in particular.
Yeah, that part I don't remember a chip in the teeth, but what I do,
it was something. Yeah,
yeah, the cartoon that took place afterwards was the adventures of those boys.
Yeah,
and they had the train as the time machine, and like, I don't remember a lot of it. I watched it. I don't remember how long it lasted, but it was just a fun cartoon. Was it really?
Yeah, two seasons.
Yeah, it really did keep some of that fun of the movies going. It was a little bit different, but it was, you know, you had this fresh perspective.
We, speaking of continuing adventures, we have played this role-playing video game that came out a couple years ago, which was a six-part story, and you would choose what you would want Marty to go and do. It takes place in the 30s.
Oh, wow.
He has to go back to the 30s to save Doc, who has been arrested and he's going to be executed. It was a new kid voicing Marty, but Christopher Lloyd came back to voice Doc.
Oh, that's cool.
And then I guess in the final chapter, Michael J. Fox played a future version of Marty.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it was pretty decent, actually.
Right on. Do you... I'm going to have to jump on your toes here. I want to know what everybody's favorite scene of the third one was.
Oh, the train, definitely.
Yeah?
The whole train sequence.
And that was your favorite as well, wasn't it,
Mara? Yeah, I like the train.
Train.
Mm-hmm. Really? Everybody's jumping on the train?
Really? Okay, John, you have to go first, because I'm curious if everybody's the train, because I know mine's not.
My favorite is the tie-in from the second movie that happens in the third movie, where in the second movie... We come up to Biff with all the girls in the hot tub watching A Fistful of Dollars, the Clint Eastwood movie. And with Marty pretending to be Clint Eastwood in the third one, because, well, when you think of cowboys and westerns, everybody thinks of Clint Eastwood. And he has to do the shootout, because he does his killing after breakfast.
Yeah.
With Buford Tannen out in the town street right out in front of the saloon. And, you know, he takes that bit from A Fistful of Dollars, and he puts on the plate, the door of the wood stove, and that becomes his bulletproof vest, just like in the movie. That was by far my favorite sequence in the third one.
That was a good sequence.
Well, everybody loves a showdown and a shootout, but just to see that element come from the second one and be done exactly the same way in the third one, pretending to be the same character, I don't know.
Thomas Wilson in that whole sequence was hilarious, too.
In the entire movie, he was awesome. Oh, but right. Yeah, in that sequence, that was really the only part of the movie where you really get that he's that dumb.
Yeah.
You know, you think he's just tough and he has these little moments here and there throughout the movie. But yeah, this is the only moment where you really see the Tannen idiocy show up, where he's trying to count down from 10 and he gets stuck at 7 and his buddy has to motion to him to 7.
You can't forfeit. What's that mean?
Wait a minute, he can't do that. No, you can't do that! Yeah, it's... And, you know, Marty to look at him and say, you know, I thought we could settle this like men. And he's like, you thought wrong. And he just up and shoots him. Like, that's what an asshole like him would have done.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I don't know. That's by far my favorite sequence. So everybody else likes the train. And I like that sequence. What about you?
I, again, am... the one that likes the more quiet scenes, I guess. I love, don't get me wrong, the train scene was awesome. Like I said, who doesn't want to be in that scene? That looked like amazing fun just to film. But I actually, my favorite part, and I don't know why, but it sticks out in my mind, is the moment when Doc Brown is saving Clara. And they're doing the horse scene and stuff. And the moment they realize, Marty realizes, when they're like, oh, she almost went over Clayton Ravine. And you just go, oh, no. I love that, because it's just the moment where you're like, they screwed up again. Not even realizing that that's what they were doing, even though they knew what her last name was. It wasn't like a...
Yeah, they never put it together.
Yeah.
And they do just mention Clayton Ravine earlier in that
they
movie.
They do. It's Clayton Ravine. So they didn't they didn't get it, and it just showed how easy it is to screw up time. Like, it really is probably not a good idea for people to do it. And I love that moment, because it's just a,
You're right, it is really a turning point, and the nice thing about that is that it was named, the ravine was Clayton Ravine because she was supposed to go in it.
Because she was supposed to go in it. It had another name beforehand.
It was Shonash Ravine, the old Indian name.
So then again, after this happened, because we know Clara does not die, it's always going to be the first name. It's never
Which it actually doesn't. They do actually, you do get an element of that at the end, where... Well, Marty was the one that supposedly went over with the train wreck. Yeah. So when Marty comes back to the future, 1985, and he's rolling across the tracks in the DeLorean, you actually see a sign that says Eastwood Ravine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's, again, you like the turning points.
Oh, I do.
Much like the Twin Pines and Lone Pine Mall in the first movie.
Yep.
Because he ran over the pine tree that the farmer
thought was... You're right, Old man Peabody owned all this. Had this crazy idea of building or breeding pine trees. Yeah, that was great.
So, yeah, I do. I like the little quiet moments sometimes where I love the extreme of the second one, but the first and the third one, I like the little quiet moments that really made you, like, the fist palm. I'm sorry, the fist palm is all about the fist palm.
Yeah, I think I just like all the loud parts, I guess.
I like the quiet moments as well. But
yeah,
it's one of my favorite film series. I can watch it a few times a year.
Yeah, I agree with you. I watch it a few times a year myself. And
I think Zane's going to love it when he gets older.
He watched the first one with me, and he napped through the second, and he watched the third with me today. Yeah, so he gets it. He still plays, but some of it.
He's not quite three yet, but it's going to be one of those really...
When he first goes back to the West... In the third one, where he shows up and all of a sudden there's the Indians coming at him, you know, because Zane thinks horses or any farm animal in general is a sheep. He just starts pointing at the screen. He's like, sheep, Dad. And I'm like, no, Zane, they're horses. And they get past and he's in the cave, and then all of a sudden the cavalry's coming. And he looks, he's like, look, Dad, sheep. I'm like, no, son, that's the cavalry.
He'll get it, and he'll love it. And actually, funny enough, he does have a little, like, reddish orange.
He does have a Marty McFly vest.
He does. Nice. And I'm like, I want to dress him up for Halloween as Draco Malfoy, but I might actually just do a couple different costumes.
He needs a white collared shirt, suspenders, which he has.
No, he doesn't have suspenders.
Oh, well, they're easy to find. He's got jeans. We just need a jean jacket.
And he has the Nike shoes, high-top Nike shoes.
Yeah, he does have the high-top Nike, so...
Wait.
We can have a little three-year-old Marty McFly running around.
Yeah, we could. Nice. That would be awesome. I think I might do it just for a little bit. Not even for Halloween. I think we should just do it.
You gotta be Doc then, John.
I'm not shaving my beard. I'll be Buford.
All right. Yeah.
I've got the gun belt.
All right. All right, guys, well, I want to thank you for coming down for this one. It was good to review a good film series for a change. So,
well, it's because I didn't choose.
Yeah, look, it was the wife that chose.
Hey, I like a lot of movies.
Oh, John, some of your choices are good.
Some of my choices are good.
The Highlander show was good.
Yeah, it really was. But the thing is, a lot of the movies I like came out at the same time as this series. And it's just this series really stands out among them because this one was good.
Yes.
You know, the 85 to 1990, there was not a lot of good movies that came out, but there was a lot of movies that came out.
Two of my favorite movies of all time came out in that time frame. This one, Back to the Future, and Die Hard. So.
Yeah. There wasn't many that were great, but there was a few. And, you know, the Back to the Future series was definitely... you know, really hands down a standout from that time frame, and still a standout from any time frame because they fit so perfectly with really, like you said, any generation.
Yep. All right, well, it's time to make like a tree and get out of here. So we're going to say goodnight, and it's time to get back in time. So see you later, guys.
Thanks for listening. To hear more We Got the Geek, check us out at www.wegotthegeek.com and on iTunes.